The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Hey, that's me. Good morning, everyone, and welcome once again. It is, congratulations, you made it. It's Friday, August 7th. I'm Peter Christian. That is Mr. Nick Christensen over there. Good morning, Mr. Nick.
Good morning.
So how are you today?
Doing good. Happy it's Friday.
On this cusp of a weekend.
Yeah, so. Doing good.
You probably have noticed I am not dressed as I usually am with my jeans and t-shirt. we are my family, my wife and I, and sister-in-law and brother-in-law. We're going to go golfing up out in let's see, where was I? Where are we going? We're somewhere east of here. And
okay.
couple of good golf courses, I understand. And they're just going to I'll be toddling along behind trying to find my ball.
So you're going to two golf courses?
Yeah, what was St. Regis, and I think there's one in Superior. Also in that area.
Okay.
Superior, I think. But anyway, so we're going to a couple of golf courses I've never been to before.
Nice.
So hopefully they'll put me on a leash and I won't get lost.
Well, don't breathe in too much of the smoke, you know.
Well, I'm hoping it's going to be better out there.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. What any callers in that area will have to let us know. But yeah, I've played St. Regis before. It's a decent little 9-hole course and very narrow. A lot of big pine trees, but
oh, good.
Yeah, it's fun.
I could kill some birds. That would be
sure.
Anyway, so what are your plans for the day once you get out of here?
Not quite sure yet today, but I'm actually not going to the lake this weekend for the first time in a while. So
okay.
I'll just be kind of around Missoula and kind of just going to relax and again try to stay out of this smoke and not cause any fires. So
now out at the lake, is it like this out there, or do you know?
When I left Monday last week or this week, and it had come in pretty good on Monday. Not sure what it's like now, but yeah, I would say it's hard to tell because obviously Missoula's a valley, so it's easy to see it trapped in here, but
right.
I mean there it's like, you know, you try to look at the mountains and look at the lake and it's just super gray and you can barely see the outline of the mountains. And so, yeah, I'm not sure if they're on any sort of air quality alerts, but obviously Missoula, Ravalli County, we're in stage 2.
Well, yeah.
For fire restriction and very high fire danger. So yeah, we're trying to be careful.
And you know, when you look out to our patented exclusive weather window here, you can't even see the outlines of the mountains.
Yeah.
You know, we've got trouble in River City, and we got to be really, really careful, especially those who have breathing problems, asthma, things like that. They really, really need to take care of themselves because this is very unforgiving weather. Well, once you're out in it, you're out in it.
Yeah, and you don't realize it's affecting you until it is, you know, so it's like, and then it's kind of a little bit too late. But yeah, when we were driving in and driving there kind of by the airport here in Missoula, you know, looking at the M and the mountain there, like you could barely see the M driving
right.
in. I'm like, wow, and normally, you know, bright white, clear, and you can see the mountain no problem. But yeah, right now it's pretty gross. So.
We're living in a smoke bowl right now. Basically looking out our window, and I miss seeing the mountains. I never thought, you know, I mean, they just take them for granted, but somebody took them, Nick. They disappeared.
they did.
I want to file a report. Anyway, now we are eagerly awaiting a visit from our friend Henry Kriegel. He's a regular guest from Americans for Prosperity. We're going to be talking with him here in just a few minutes and find out what he has to say. And then in the 9 o'clock hour.
Actually at 8:30.
Oh, 8:30. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
8:30 until 10. We'll be talking with one of our favorite guests, Dr. John Lott, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. He's going to be joining us on the phone. And of course, a lot of folks love to talk with him and ask him questions about firearms, things like that. That's all coming up here on TalkBack. So stay with us. More coming up. Statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Talkback is brought.
Dennis Bragg with your weekend forecast. Red flag warnings from noon today through Saturday evening for the East Lolo, Bitterroot, Deer Lodge, West Beaverhead, and East Beaverhead zones with hot temperatures, low humidity, and winds that could gust up to about 20 miles per hour. Areas of smoke will continue as we just can't completely clear out the valleys. Sunny and hot with highs near 97. Overnight lows Friday and Saturday, just a bit warmer in the low 50s. If winds develop Saturday, that could help our air quality. Mostly sunny conditions, a little cooler on Sunday.
Hey, we're back on Talkback. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. And we have a special guest waiting on the phone with us right now. Henry Kriegel is joining us from Americans for Prosperity. Henry, good morning and welcome back.
Good morning, Peter. Great to be back with you.
All right. Tell us what's going on in your world. I know you're situated there out of Bozeman. Tell us what's going on with Americans for Prosperity.
Well, you know, our partner organization, Americans for Prosperity Action, just reached over 100,000 doors. We knocked over 100,000 doors in support of Kurt Ame for the U.S. Senate. And that's a big milestone for us. And we are moving forward promoting Kurt because he has a proven track record of success as a tax cutter under Governor Judy Martz. And as someone who helped balance the budget under very difficult times during Governor Gianforte's administration, and he's a U.S. Attorney under prosecutor under Donald Trump for his two terms. So he's got a proven track record of success. I'd like to talk a little bit more about his record as a tax cutter with our audience here today. We also are waiting the word from Alani Blankhead whether she will stay in the race or drop out. That's she's got 3 days to decide. August 10th is the deadline for her to decide whether she's going to stay in ultimately or drop out.
So
either way, we are laser focused on supporting our guy.
Is she the only opponent right now in this race against Mr. Ame?
No, you've got Alani as the Democrat candidate, and
right.
You've got Seth Bodner as a so-called independent.
Right. That's right. That's right. That's
candidate.
Right.
So the thinking is if Alani stays in the race, it makes it an easier pathway for our candidate. However, we take nothing for granted, and we will run through the tape hard. If Alani drops out of the race, then it becomes a two-person race, and the stakes get higher. The race will be more intensely competitive, but we are very very confident in our capabilities and the work of our team across the state. Over 100 canvassers knocking doors in support of Kurt Ame, talking about his proven track record of success.
Now, Henry, let me ask you this. Are there any debates set up between Mr. Ame and the other candidates?
Well, at this point, I'm not in charge of that.
Right.
And I'm not aware of any.
Okay.
We'll see how it all shakes down after August 10th. We'll see who's in the race. If Alani drops out, the Democrats have until the 20th, I believe, to find the replacement or not. There's a debate about whether or not the Democrats will be required to find a replacement candidate, and there might be a legal challenge. But I don't want to get too sidetracked here. you know, Peter, I'd like to talk about our guy.
Please.
And I've spoken before about Kurt being a tax cutter. Well, he was the vice chair of Judy Martz's Income Tax Advisory Council back in 2002. And he's the one who assembled the report from its membership, which ultimately resulted in the largest income tax cut in Montana's history from 11%. Can you believe that? We were in double-digit income tax rates here in the state. The highest rate was 11%. It went down to 6.9%, making him the biggest and most successful tax cutter in Montana's history as the governor's tax revenue director and vice chair of the Income Tax Advisory Council. And it created a capital gains tax credit, lowering effective tax rates on investment income. It eliminated the deductions of federal income tax paid And it simplified portions of Montana's income tax code and system. So that's all proven track record of success. And none of the opponents can measure up to that. So this man has been dedicating his life to public service. As you all know, he is a son of Montana. Both his parents were teachers in Great Falls. I believe he graduated high school in Miles City. His professional career has mostly happened in Billings. Now he has, and I do believe it is a calling and is a sacrifice, because we live in the last best place in the United States here in Montana. And to uproot yourself and to go to D.C., I do believe is a sacrifice.
Well,
he's willing to do that because he feels called to do it.
Well, I know that every one of our representatives, no matter what the party, makes a sacrifice, especially if they want to, represent the state in Washington. It's an honor to be in Washington. But in my many conversations with the congressmen and senators, it can be a challenge. I mean, because it's expensive to live there, and you need to have basically two headquarters, one at home and one in D.C.
You do, and you look at guys like Senator Tim Sheehy, who's got a young family and a successful business, cattle ranch, and a lovely wife. And for him to leave his wife and kids, young kids, to go to D.C. and serve there for at least a term, maybe longer, that is a major sacrifice. He's not a part of the daily life of his children. Thankfully, Carmen is a great mother. He's got, colleagues and friends and those who work on the ranch who integrate the kids into ranch life. And they apparently, by my observations, things are going very well and they're having a wonderful life. But it is a sacrifice, and it is a stress, and it is a strain. So we many times criticize these guys a lot, and sometimes for good cause. But we don't offer a lot of appreciation and thanks, and we ought to do that.
Henry, we have 30 seconds left in our time together. Give us the why we should be voting for him, sir.
Kurt Ame has a proven track record of success as a tax cutter. He balanced the budget, and he fought to keep our state safe by prosecuting violent criminals here in Montana. So he deserves our vote, because he will do good work in D.C. for us.
Henry, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for sharing your views with us. And we look forward to having Kurt on the air sometime with us here on TalkBack. We'll look forward to that.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. You take care. Thank you so much, sir. We are going to be, we're up against a break here. Our phone number, 721-1290, 1-800-568-5309. And we have Jeff waiting when we come back from the break right after this quick timeout on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Need a roofing?
Smiles are powerful. A simple smile can light up a whole room. And for 25 years, Smile Train has been lighting up the world with smiles. And each smile marks a step towards a brighter future. As the world's largest cleft lip and palate charity, Smile Train has supported more than 2 million life-changing cleft surgeries in over 90 countries, leaving a legacy of resilience, joy, and beaming smiles for generations of children. To learn more about cleft lips and palates and how Smile Train is supporting the cleft community all over the world, please visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, lighting up the world with smiles for 25 years.
We are the keepers of the wild. For more than 80 years, we've been committed to conserving the natural landscapes that define our nation. Nothing is more important than maintaining wild spaces for adventurers to explore and wildlife to thrive. We are America's hunters and target shooters. Together with firearm, ammunition, and archery manufacturers, we've supported the conservation of more than 36 million acres of American wildlands. For more information, visit outdoorstewards.org.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us on this edition, Friday edition of Talk Back. Peter Christian here with Mr. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls this morning. And we do have a brief time of open phones before we'll be visiting with Dr. John Lott. He'll be on with us from 9 to 10 and 8:30 to 10. And thank you, Nick. Appreciate that. I wrote that wrong there. He's going to be on with us from 8:30 until 10. So
yeah, about 7 minutes.
About right? 7 minutes from now. Thank you. We always look forward to Dr. Lott's visits with us. Right now, Jeff is waiting. Jeff, good morning, sir. You're on with Peter and Nick. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, gents. Good morning, Montana. Yeah, Henry's appearance made me think of something. Yesterday I got another flyer opposing Kurt Ommey from the Montana Freedom Pack.
Okay.
Which sounds like a conservative organization, but when you go to the Federal Election Commission and do a little digging, it starts to get pretty weird pretty quick. The Montana Freedom Pack is actually based out of Washington, D.C.
Okay.
There's a guy there named, what's his name? Jorge Badillo runs the Montana Freedom Pack out of Washington, D.C.
Wow.
They have about $2 million. Of that, $900,000 is from a pack called the Wayback Pack. So you've got the Wayback Pack funding $900,000 to the Montana Freedom Pack. And there's a bunch of other funds and individuals there, too, doing the $2 million. So then you go to the Wayback Pack, and you find out they've got over $5 million. They're out of Sheridan, Wyoming, but they're funded by an organization called the Western Action Fund. That's where my trail ended. I didn't have the time to go back any further, but I was hoping that you could ask Henry if he ever does any digging into the dark money that supports the left. Because remember, years ago, there was a documentary about dark money in Montana,
right?
And it was all about supposed right-wing dark money. But let me tell you, there's a whole bunch of left-wing dark money. I just very briefly uncovered about $7 million going to various places. So now there's a whole host of folks nationally who oppose Kurt Ommey and want to not have him succeed. So just a note of caution to the other listener that if you get these things with highfalutin conservative sounding names, Montana Freedom Pack and stuff, Western Action Fund, they're not what they appear to be.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, sir. We appreciate it. All right. And Dave is with us. Dave, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, about the Senate race, I find it interesting. I get the charge against the former University of Montana president, I guess personally, was that he wanted a woman to smile more. That seems to be the big charge against him. When we elected a president, the present president was charged with a lot of women charging him with sexual assault. That didn't seem to matter. So, I mean, I'm just curious on the Senate race. Why aren't they discussing the issues? Why aren't they talking about the difference between them instead of, you know, whether or not the university president ask the woman to smile more?
Well, one would think that would be the essence and most important thing to the public is finding out what these individuals actually believe and think and will fight for when they get elected to whatever office they're running for. But it's seductive when these other issues come creeping in. It just seems, you know, like, oh, this could be salacious. Let's listen to this. Where is this going to go? And it kind of it's very distracting.
Yeah, exactly. We should be talking about the issues instead of about stuff that has not even been proven one way or the other. And that's, I wish they had a debate. I don't understand why they're not coming on your radio station to talk about what they believe.
They will, Dave, they will, and they have. So, yeah, as it gets a little closer, I mean, we had pretty much all the Senate candidates on as the primary was going on, but we will get them on, obviously, all of them before the election. So we'll have time to ask them.
Okay, that's great. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You can always trust Nick. He's on top of it, man.
Well, we're going to do our very best. I guess I shouldn't say we'll have all of them. I can almost guarantee we'll have pretty much all of them because I've already kind of spoken to most of their camps. So we'll just get them on the schedule. They'll probably start somewhere in early September. And September will be a busy political month.
So. I was just looking at the Wayback Pack website here, and there's a gigantic full screen picture of the Missoula County Fairgrounds, of the building where the elections start here. And so, hey, it's got a little bit of a Missoula flavor, so what can I say? All right. We are going to be coming back in just a minute or so. We're going to be taking a break here. Dr. John Locke is scheduled to join us this morning, and he's going to be with us here in just a few minutes. So founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, and we're looking forward to hearing from him. And, of course, lots of folks want to ask questions of Dr. Locke, all the work that he does with the Crime Prevention Research Center. So that's coming up here in just a few minutes. So stay with us. You're listening to Talk Back on this Friday, August 7th. We're going to come right back on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
From our family. Dennis Bragg with your weekend forecast. Red flag warnings from noon today through Saturday evening for the East Lolo, Bitterroot, Deer Lodge, West Beaverhead, and East Beaverhead zones with hot temperatures, low humidity, and winds that could gust up to about 20 miles per hour. Areas of smoke will continue as we just can't completely clear out the valleys. Sunny and hot with highs near 97. Overnight lows Friday and Saturday, just a bit warmer in the low 50s. If winds develop Saturday, that could help our air quality. Mostly sunny conditions, a little cooler on Sunday.
Smiles are powerful. A simple smile can light up a whole room. And for 25 years, Smile Train has been lighting up the world with smiles. And each smile marks a step towards a brighter future. As the world's largest cleft lip and palate charity, Smile Train has supported more than 2 million life-changing cleft surgeries in over 90 countries. Leaving a legacy of resilience, joy, and beaming smiles for generations of children. To learn more about cleft lips and palates and how Smile Train is supporting the cleft community all over the world, please visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, lighting up the world with smiles for 25 years.
Being blind doesn't always look how others may think. Stargardt disease was supposed to define me.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
A blinding eye disease attempted to force me away from doing what I was born to do.
But it cannot stop me. I have the tools.
I will keep moving forward.
Pushing past the limits of this disability.
I know where to find support and where I can be seen.
Loss of sight won't blind our vision. Innovative research, educational resources, supportive community. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is leading the charge in finding treatments and cures for blinding diseases. Learn more at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
This is our shared heritage, but today we're divided, except for our love of wildlife and wild places they and we call home. We are closer than you think. Learn more at defenders.org.
Hey, we're back. This is Talk Back, and we are privileged to have with us Dr. John Locke, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, on the phone with us. John, good morning and welcome again, sir.
It's great to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure. And again, for those who may be new to the show and aren't familiar with the Crime Prevention Research Center, can you give us a thumbnail sketch of what you do, sir?
Well, we're basically a group of academics who do research on crime issues. I myself have had academic either research or teaching positions at Stanford, University of Chicago, the Wharton Business School, Yale, UCLA, Rice. I was the chief economist for the United States Sentencing Commission in Washington. And then more recently, I was the senior advisor for research and statistics in the Department of Justice. And, you know, if it deals with crime, there's a good chance that we've dealt with it. Everything from policing policies to gun control to vote fraud type issues are all issues, and many things in between we've done. And, you know, we go around the world, in fact, and talk to policing groups and to others about crime issues, not just in the United States, but in other places.
Now, are you, I just for folks who don't, who never had a chance to hear you on our show, are you an advocacy group in any way? Or are you simply there for education and information?
Well, we try to be there to figure out how the world works, and sometimes our views change on things. But we have a diverse group of people who work with us. Carl Moody, who's our research director, who's a professor at William & Mary. He's actually written papers in the past that have criticized some of my work. So the thing is, you want to have people with different views because of the fact that, you want to know what objections can be raised to what you're doing before you put it out there. And if everybody has the same views on everything, it's unlikely that you're going to get that type of criticism, which is important. I mean, look, over time, what makes a good paper, academic paper, good is that you've kind of anticipated all the possible objections and concerns that can be raised, and that you've tried to deal with it to show whether the results you have are sensitive or not to different, taking into account different things. But, and hopefully over time, you get pretty good at anticipating what are the weaknesses or strengths of the different arguments to go and make sure that you deal with them. But you're never going to catch everything. And so it's important to have others around. I mean, unfortunately, I don't think too much of academia has that view anymore. I mean, academia is pretty uniform in terms of their views. But it's still something that I think is very important, and I try to take advantage of that when I can.
Well, the last thing you want is an echo chamber in an organization like the Crime Prevention Research Center. You want to have a diverse bunch of folks who are constantly contributing different ideas.
Exactly. And nobody's perfect in thinking about all these things, and hopefully by bouncing ideas off people, you end up getting the right result in the end. But anyway, that's a brief overview of what we do.
Well, that's wonderful. So we are about a little less than a minute and a half away from a break. Do we have time to take a call?
Let's try to get Nancy's call, question.
Yeah. Nancy, you have a question for John. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Morning, Gloria. And good morning, John. This is has to do with the 1952 McCarran-Walters Act, which is still the law. It's Chapter 2, Section 212. Maybe you're aware of it, maybe you're not, but it has to do with prohibiting anyone coming into our country who belongs to a radical group such as Islam and Sharia law, which is not compatible with our government, or who belongs to organizations who tries to take us down. And I just kind of want to ask, this doesn't seem to have been enforced lately, especially during the Joe Biden years. And we're seeing so many Muslims, Islamic Muslims, trying to enter our politics. Like Dearborn, Michigan, just this week, we had this Abdul El Said, whose parents entered our country illegally. He was born here, then he left and went back to Turkey and became radicalized, and now he's back. He's, you know.
Nancy,
we got about
15 seconds before we have to hard break. So
can you tell us, John, what about it? Why isn't this law being used against this threat?
We're coming right back. Stay with us.
In a world of
Hey, we're back on TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number, 406-721-1290 is our number. Of course, we're statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Our guest right now, Dr. John Lott, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And some interesting questions there from Nancy. So please go ahead, John.
Right. Yeah, so the McCarran-Walter Act in 1952, it did have restrictions on who could come into the country. If you were a communist or a member of a totalitarian or anarchist organization, they could bar you from foreign nationals from coming into the U.S. Also, if it was determined that your activities would be, quote, prejudicial to the public interest or endanger the safety or security of the U.S. The thing is, I don't think it could be interpreted that just because somebody was a Muslim, they could keep the person out of the country. Obviously, there's going to be certain Muslim groups which one may be able to go and attach that to. But it would take more than the fact that they were just Muslims. And you know, by the way, Secretary Rubio has done things like check the social media posts for people to see whether or not they may have views that may endanger the safety or security of the United States. So, I mean, the Trump administration is trying to operationalize that, at least to some extent. You know, you may want to have more of a complete ban on people from certain groups, like just simply because they're Muslim. But I don't think that would fly. I'm pretty sure the courts wouldn't allow that to happen.
They would definitely step in there. All right, let's get Rick on the line. Rick, good morning. You're on with Dr. John Lott. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Dr. Lott. Recently, the Supreme Court struck down a law in Hawaii for gun carriers to be able to go into private property, say like grocery stores, private property that's open to the public. And they struck down that law that they were trying to stop people from carrying guns. New York, New Jersey, California, and Maryland have similar laws. My two questions is, who brought this suit against the state of California? And will they have to do the same thing in the four previous states that I said? Or will that law carry over to those states? And I'll listen to your comment on the radio.
Thanks, Rick.
Right. That was the Wolford case. It was out of Hawaii. It was brought by somebody who had a concealed carry permit. You know, basically, and it will apply to all the states that are there. They may have to bring individual lawsuits in those states to go and enforce that. But assuming the lower courts follow the Supreme Court reasoning in that case, they'll have to do that. Now, obviously, we've seen a number of times where lower courts, at least in the last year or so, have refused to follow Supreme Court decisions, and they'll get their wrists slapped eventually. But eventually, those laws in those other states will be struck down. So what happened was, prior to 2022, you had seven so-called may issue states, which included the ones that you just mentioned, which would basically say that in order to get a concealed carry permit, you'd have to go to some local public official like the local sheriff or somebody like that and provide a good reason for why you should be able to go and get a permit. In a state like Hawaii, they literally didn't give it out to anybody. In California, you may have had like a tenth of one percentage point. In Los Angeles County, a county of 8.5 million people, they've given out like 341 concealed carry permits. And so what happened was they said, look, you can have a law like you've had in Montana, where once you pass a criminal background check, once you pay your fee, once you, you know, if you don't have a criminal record, a few states require some type of training. But once you've met those objective rules and you apply, then a permit has to be granted to you if you want to get it. That forced these states to start issuing permits. But what happened was they said, well, if you're going to force us to issue permits, we're going to want to set it up so that you can't carry any place. And so that was kind of the logic that they had there. And the Supreme Court, as you mentioned, struck that down. There was actually an excellent concurrent opinion by Amy Coney Barrett. And she compared it to what would be similar restrictions in the First Amendment. So what this law did was you had to go and get permission from the property owner before you could go onto the property there. So if you wanted to go and stop at a gas station or a grocery store, you'd have to find out who was the owner of the gas station or the grocery store and get their prior approval, specific approval for you to carry there.
Wow.
And, you know, they knew it would. In fact, if you look at the legislative debate, they explicitly knew that it was essentially their way of just banning people from being able to go and carry. And Barrett, in her concurrence, said, well, look, what happens if we applied this to the First Amendment dealing with religious freedom?
Right.
So let's say you're going to wear a cross or you're going to wear a yarmulke. Do you have to go and get approval from the property owners, from any gas station or grocery store before you could step onto their property for you wearing the cross? And she said it's pretty clear the courts would just strike down immediately that type of law. Now, you can go and say, put up a sign that says, I don't think people with a concealed carry permit should be able to carry on property. But that's very different than the type of restriction that they were having in Hawaii and these other states.
You bet. Dr. Lott, we're coming up against a hard break here, and the phone lines are open if you have a question for Dr. John Lott, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. Pick up the phone, give us a call. He'll be with us till 10 o'clock this morning. So the phone number is, phone lines open, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Thanks so much for joining us here on Talk Back Statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We'll be back right after this. Hey, we are back on Talk Back. And since it is Friday, Dr. Lott giving way just a little bit here for the weekly crime report. And Chief Deputy County Attorney Mac Bloom is joining us. Mac, good morning, sir, and welcome.
Yeah, good morning, Peter, and good morning to the listeners. The Missoula County Attorney's Office ended up charging 14 felonies this week. We did 5 violent crimes, persons crimes, 4 endangerment crimes, 2 property crimes, and 3 drug crimes for a total of 14. For those violent crimes against persons crimes, 3 of them were family violence, strangulation type offenses, and then 2 of them were just stranger violence or robbery type cases. So pretty standard week for us, not super high, not super low, kind of what we'd expect for this time of week or year. I've been pleasantly surprised with the fair going on. There hasn't been a whole lot of criminal conduct associated with that. We only had one felony this week that was kind of tied to an individual at the fair who was having a mental health episode and got into an altercation with law enforcement. But other than that, it's been pretty quiet. So I think people are enjoying the carnival and staying out of trouble, which is always good.
Mac, I've been seeing an uptick in felony DUI cases. Could you just let our audience know kind of how your office handles those situations and what's been going on trend-wise?
Yeah, you bet, Nick. So I've actually seen, just in the last couple of weeks, I've seen a fair number of those as well. For folks that don't know, under Montana law, your first three DUIs are misdemeanors with the penalties increasing on every single one, and then a fourth offense is a felony. If you drive in a dangerous manner that puts other people's lives at risk, that is also its own felony. It's called criminal endangerment. So we charge a lot of those. A lot of the times when we see those criminal endangerments, it's wrong way drivers. I see we had at least one case this week where there was a wrong way driver on a one way that resulted in a high speed chase. So it has happened quite a bit. I think in the summer when people are out, you know, doing barbecues, floating the river, it's easy to maybe not think about your ride home or make good decisions. So I would just encourage folks to please plan ahead, you know, consider calling an Uber, call a friend. We have been seeing a lot of DUIs this summer, and including DUIs with really dangerous driving behavior associated with them.
I know there was an individual that was charged. They were allegedly intoxicated and trying to buy more alcohol from an establishment here in Missoula, and the employee actually obviously refused and was the one that called law enforcement. How helpful is that, you know, to have the community kind of looking out for things like that? And I mean, obviously an employee there, but maybe someone on the roadway that notices something that could contact law enforcement.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important. I'd say at least half of the DUI cases that we get are concerned citizens calling in to report, you know, poor driving, weaving in their lane. So we really do rely on the public to keep an eye out. And when they see someone driving in an unsafe manner, to just call 911. We frequently get those calls, and then law enforcement's dispatched right away. And we often do catch those people. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes they're gone by the time the police get there. But a lot of times we do. As far as, you know, people who work in alcohol-serving establishments, we also rely on them to really monitor the patron's consumption. And, you know, under Montana law, it is unlawful to serve a visibly intoxicated individual. I feel like Missoula bars and establishments are usually pretty good about keeping an eye on that. And when someone's really slurring their words or, you know, kind of stumbling around, just cutting them off and saying no more.
Now, there is training. Is it mandatory training for folks who work in an establishment like that, or is that on a voluntary basis?
I think there is, Peter. I think it. I guess I can't speak to that. I'm not 100% sure on what's required with the training. Okay. I know a lot of the bartenders do go through that training. I don't know if it's required, though.
Mac, when it comes to breathalyzers and when people are blowing a BAC, obviously we get that information and it's, you know, 0.08 or higher. Do charges differ based on the severity of that? Because, you know, we've had where it's three times a legal limit, four times. Do you guys look at that when it comes to charging?
Yeah, absolutely. There's actually an offense called aggravated DUI, which is if you blow above a 0.16. So that has enhanced penalties as far as increased jail time, increased fines. So that is built into the law. There's actually, people don't really know this, but there's two types of DUIs. There's a standard DUI, which means that you're intoxicated enough that you're not safe to drive, and that can be at any level. You could be a 0.06. And if it's really hitting you hard and it's making you swerve all over the road, you can still get a DUI if you're not safe to be driving. The other kind of DUI that most people think of is the DUI per se, which is driving above a 0.08. And then when you get above a 0.16, it becomes an aggravated DUI. So there's a couple of different, you know, slight nuances in the law there, but generally the 0.08 limit is what we look for. And then when they get above 0.16, they get enhanced penalties. And then we have a broad range of sentences that we can impose, you know, for a first aggravated DUI, the penalty is up to a year. So
wow.
When they get up to, you know, 0.3, 0.4, things like that, then the penalty is certainly going to be worse because it's obviously even more dangerous.
Mac, it is always a pleasure. Thank you for the report. We appreciate it. And keep up the good work, sir.
Yeah, you bet. You guys have a great weekend, and I hope the listeners have a great weekend as well.
Thank you very, very much. We appreciate that report, and we're going to we're coming up on our top of the hour break, and we will continue our conversation with Dr. John Lott, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, when we come back from the top of the hour break. So if you'd like to get in the queue, as some people already are, give us a call at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Coming right back.
Views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Welcome back, everyone. It is hour number two of TalkBack for this Friday, August the 7th, and we want to reintroduce our guest, Dr. John Lott. He's the founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And John, I know you are a prolific author, and since research is your bag, it's part of the name of your organization. Tell us a little bit about the organization, how it was founded, and what it's all about, if you don't mind, please.
Sure. Well, we're basically a group of academics who do research on a wide range of crime issues. My own background, I've had research or teaching positions at Stanford, University of Chicago, the Wharton Business School, Yale, UCLA, Rice. I was the chief economist for the United States Sentencing Commission in Washington. And more recently, I was the senior advisor for research and statistics in the Department of Justice. Our research director, Carl Moody, is a professor at William & Mary. We've just brought on another professor from the University of Georgia, who do extensive crime research. You know, if it's something to deal with crime, we deal with it. We are researchers who have dealt with academic studies on crime over the years, and you know, if it deals with crime, anything from policing to gun control to vote fraud or anything in between, there's at least a reasonable chance that we've looked at it. And people can go to our website at crimeresearch.org to see some of the stuff that we've been working on recently.
Now, you're also an author. What are some of the books that you've written?
Right. Well, I've written 10 books. I've written everything from, I guess my most famous is More Guns, Less Crime. But I've also written books that deal with things like the judicial confirmation process, a book called Dumbing Down the Courts that explains how basically from the 1970s through about 2010, the quality of judges kept on declining in terms of how smart they were, that the smartest judges had a hard time getting confirmed. And that's changed, at least during the Obama and Trump administrations. Biden had other kind of goals in mind. But, other books that I've done, I have a book, Freedomnomics, that goes through about 45 of my peer-reviewed academic papers on a wide range of issues from pricing by firms to vote fraud to the impact of giving women the right to vote on the size of government to, you know, you name it, just about. It deals with some crime issues, but many other issues as well. you know, my most recent book is Gun Control Myths. That goes through over 40 myths about guns and crime. I have other books too.
Well, we are going to be taking the phone lines are already lighting up for you. We're up against a break here in a little less than 30 seconds. So, by the way, some phone lines are still open. If you have a question for Dr. Law, please feel free to pick up the phone. Give us a call, 406-721-1290, 1-800-568-5309. Of course, Dr. Lott is the founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, prolific author, and we really love having him on the air, and he loves answering your questions. So if you have a question, feel free to give us a call at 406-721-1290. Talk back statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We're coming right back after this quick timeout.
If you're Dennis Bragg with your weekend forecast, red flag warnings from noon today through Saturday evening for the East Lolo, Bitterroot, Deer Lodge, West Beaverhead, and East Beaverhead zones with hot temperatures, low humidity, and winds that could gust up to about 20 miles per hour. Areas of smoke will continue as we just can't completely clear out the valleys. Sunny and hot with highs near 97. Overnight lows Friday and Saturday, just a bit warmer in the low 50s. If winds develop Saturday, that could help our air quality. Mostly sunny conditions, a little cooler on Sunday.
Hey, thanks for joining us on this Friday edition of Talk Back. I'm Peter Christian. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. We're honored to have with us Dr. John Lott, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And folks have been waiting through the top of the hour to talk with you, sir. Joe from Ronan is up first. Joe, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I'm a past legislator, state of Montana, termed out. And I used to represent part of the Blackfeet and most of the Flathead Indian Reservation. And there's a crime statistic problem where the Flathead tribe is under PL 280, which is public law, where the county and the state get to prosecute tribal members, but the other reservations are controlled by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And Polson and Ronan are constantly, statistically, very high on the crime rates. Polson is listed as number one in crime. Sometimes it's Ronan. But they always bounce around the front. But the Indian reservations don't report those same crimes to the state, and they get hidden in the Bureau of Indian Affairs problems. So we have an unincorporated town called Pablo in between where the crimes actually exist, but because it's unincorporated, those statistics get moved to Ronan and Polson. And I think it's a statistical anomaly. And the tribal police and the county work great together, and that's not the issue. It's just strictly a statistical problem. And the crime rate on other reservations, since it was on the state interim committee, was, if not more violent, higher on other reservations. It just happens to be reported on the Flathead Indian Reservation. Right. That's my question. How can we fix that?
All right. Thanks for the call, sir.
Well, you're going to have to deal with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, I think, to do that. It's not unusual that Indian reservations have very high crime rates. In fact, that's pretty much the norm across the country. There's some variation. But generally that's the case. So, you know, I think you'd have to go and talk to your congressperson to go and deal with that. Zinke, I guess, while he's still in office. Aaron Flint, I guess, looks like he's going to win in the western part in November. And so you got to reach out to them and get them to, write a letter to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Of course, you can go to Sheehy, the senator, and also talk to them about it. But, at least as a former legislator, maybe you'll get people listen to you slightly more than they would otherwise. But, you would think the people in Paulson, they don't want to make everybody think that they're a lot more dangerous than they actually are. That affects whether people want to move into the area. It affects other things that are there, whether businesses want to move up and set in. If they think it's a much more dangerous area, crime rates have a big effect on property values and everything else. So you would think the city fathers there would have some incentive to also contact the federal politicians to get them to put some pressure on the Bureau of Indian Affairs to properly count those numbers.
All right, let's get another call in. This is James from Whitefish. James, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott.
Hello, Dr. Lott. Happy to have the chance to listen to you as well as talk to you. The Aberfeld decision was about 6 years ago, maybe a bit more. And I've been kind of scratching my head ever since that the logic that was applied to expanding or forcing the acceptance of homosexual marriage certificates across the country. And I agree with that in a sense. But, the carry permits are covered by the Second Amendment, and no form of marriage is covered directly in any of the constitutional documents. Right. You must be aware of this, and I'm wondering, maybe you can help me with my head scratching as to why, at the very least, the gun groups protecting the Second Amendment and gun owners haven't seized on the Aberfeld decision and pushed to have carry permits recognized across the entire United States. Rather than trying to, it's laudable, but trying to get federal government to deal with it.
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, you're right. You're not going to get anything through Congress. All the Republicans in the Senate would vote for it, you need to pick up right now 7 Democrats, and there's not one single Democrat who would vote for it. I mean, the irony is, you have, I think it's something like 14 Democrats from senators who represent states, which essentially recognize people being able to go and carry concealed from all the other states in the country. And, there's no problems. There's no moves in those states to just not recognize the permits from other states. And so they can see there's no problems, but yet they'll vote against it. Now there are cases that are starting to go through the courts. It takes a while, it takes years, and there's kind of also just kind of a strategic thing. Which cases do you bring first? I mean, the Supreme Court takes maybe 65 cases a year. There's probably about 120,000 cases that are decided by circuit courts across the country each year. So it's just a tiny fraction. Everybody wants the Supreme Court to kind of deal with their cases. And, this next year, there's a big case out of Connecticut and Chicago dealing with assault weapons bans. So, and possibly magazine bans. So,
we're up against our hard break, Dr. Lott. I'm so sorry. I want you to finish that when we come back from the break. 721-1290 is our number. You're listening to Talk Back on the Montana Talks Radio Network with Dr. John Lott.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. While northern Idaho and especially the areas around the Spokane fires continue to deal with heavier smoke today, Montana finally seeing some relief. Most of the reporting stations across the state seeing moderate air quality or even good air quality across the High Line and at some locations in the Flathead today. Only the Southern Bitterroot, the Missoula Valley, and Libby were reporting the air was unhealthy for sensitive groups. The forecast today is for the smoke to continue to ease after a few days of cooler weather as ease some of the regional fires. Stage 2 fire restrictions going into effect across the city of Missoula as hot, dry weather continues to push the local fire danger to very high. Starting Friday, the restrictions will apply to all city-owned open space and conservation lands. Under the rules, campfires, outdoor smoking, off-road motorized travel, and the use of internal combustion engines or open flame equipment is limited between 1 p.m. and 1 a.m. In fact, it's strictly prohibited. Those also apply to state and federal lands in the Missoula area. Billings police getting to the bottom of that case where a toddler was slammed into the pavement when two adults got into a fight.
A video circulating on social media shows a couple arguing in a parking lot in Billings. During a physical altercation between the two individuals over control of a baby stroller, a baby is ejected from the stroller and lands face down on the asphalt. The Billings Police Department posted on Facebook stating that officers were made aware of the video on social media and immediately began investigating. Police identified all individuals involved and stated that investigators were actively working to locate those parties. The Billings Police Department also notified appropriate public service and child welfare agencies who were placed on standby. The case is to be submitted to the appropriate charging authority for review upon completion of the investigation. Authorities located the baby and transported the child to a hospital for evaluation. The child was treated and released. No serious injuries were announced. All necessary child welfare agencies were notified and involved as appropriate. In Great Falls, for the Montana State News Network, I'm Chris Cards.
Hi, I'm Attorney General Austin Knutson. When you see emergency lights on the side of the road, slow down and move over. It's dangerous for first responders to help motorists on the side of the road while cars are buzzing by at 80 miles an hour. In Montana, when you see emergency lights on the side of the road, you must slow down and move over, or face a fine or even jail time. It's the law. When you see someone pulled over, slow down and move over. Sponsored by the Montana Department of Justice.
Montana's future is on the line. Will you stand up and fight? Montana was built on hard work, strong families, and economic freedom. Americans for Prosperity is building a grassroots movement, and we need you to help lead the charge. Our wages are among the lowest in the nation. Our children rank near the bottom in math and reading. Home ownership is becoming an out-of-reach dream for many, while government interference and radical regulations strangle our industries. Join us today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. Paid for by Americans for Prosperity.
Talk back, rolling right along on this Friday, August 7th. Peter Christian here, Mr. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. And our guest on the phone, Dr. John Lott, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. Nick, go ahead.
Yeah, John, you were in the middle of answering James's question, so we'll let you finish that. But he also just called to see if you could still talk about why the Aberfeld decision regarding gay marriage wasn't extended to carry permits. So if you could add that to your answer, that'd be great.
Right. Well, so what I was going to say is that there are cases that are starting to go through the courts right now that deal with the question of whether your Second Amendment rights end at the state border. So you have somebody, I think, in New Hampshire who has a concealed carry permit, but ended up getting arrested when they went into Massachusetts. And you know, those are the types of cases because Massachusetts wouldn't issue a permit to somebody from outside the state. And there are other states that have had those types of restrictions, too. You know, the vast majority of states effectively have reciprocity with regard to it. You know, it's not like a driver's license, though, where you can drive from Florida to Washington State or Maine. You know, the basic thing is even when you have reciprocity, you have to obey, just like you have to obey the different traffic rules, you know, no turn on red, right turn on red in some states, and most others, you're able to go and do it. As far as the Aberfeld case, you know, the court and whether they could have applied it directly to concealed carry, The court usually only deal or should only deal with the case that's directly in front of them. You know, this is not, nobody mentioned, there's no discussion of concealed carry in that case. Now, somebody may, in a future case, go and reference that to go and say the logic in there should apply to concealed carry, but there's no reason for them to have brought it up in that particular case.
All right, let's get Harry on the line. Harry, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning, John. Yeah, I've listened to you quite a bit, and when you bring up, you know,
to you too.
Yeah, with crime statistics and, you know, claims of voter fraud, I find your methodology rather questionable because you don't, first of all, for the crime, you seem to not take it, well, you doubt any numbers coming from crime or law enforcement, or you, at least you throw shade on it, and but then you fall back on people, you know, just making claims or polls or, you know, doing surveys, and that's, I mean, you know, that at least the law enforcement has standards they say that they set their thing by. These other things are just, you know, anecdotal evidence or just, you know, people making charges, you know, without any kind of real evidence. So, and also same with the voter fraud. I mean, you have people making these anecdotal, you know, claims, but there's, you know, until it comes through, even crime, unless someone is convicted, really there's no crime because people are acquitted. And there's, you know, you, like, especially you get like assault, sexual assault or rape.
Okay.
He said, she said. So, I mean, you know, again, unless we want to go say anybody who makes accusations, that's a crime, well, then Trump has committed lots of crimes because a lot of people, women, accused him of stuff. So, to me, it's...
Harry, do you have a question?
More standard than that.
Is there a
right.
question there?
Okay, so you brought up a couple things. One is, I don't throw shade, as you say, on law enforcement and their crime statistics. What I try to explain to people is that there are two different measures that we have of crime. We have crimes reported to police, okay, but we also have total crimes. Most, I think all researchers realize that most crimes aren't reported to police. About 40% of violent crimes are reported to police, and about 30% of property crimes are reported to police. So in the United States, the Department of Justice has something called the National Crime Victimization Survey, where they survey 240,000 people each year. And the reason why they do that, and they've been doing that for like 53 years, to try to go and measure, get a measure of total crime. So I want to know, are the crimes being reported to police? What percentage of crimes are being reported to police? That's interesting. You know, you want to go and be able to explain whether crimes are being reported to police and what changes them. And I've talked on the show many times about the fact that whether people report crimes to police depends upon such things as whether they think the criminal's being caught and punished. If they don't think the criminal's going to be caught and punished, they're much less likely to go and report those crimes to the police. So so it's not that I cast shade. I just try to explain to you, and I've done this on the show many times, that we have different measures of crime, and they pick up different things. And, you know, unless you think, and I don't think the police believe that all crimes are reported to police, but unless you think that all crimes are reported to police, then, you know, we have to realize that there are other measures that are out there. And other countries like Canada and Australia, and we've talked about that
yep.
before,
but we're up against a hard commercial break. We're going to continue with Dr. Lott. You can continue with that thought when we come back from the break. And we have Jeff standing by, and the other phone lines are all open for the next half hour, as Dr. Lott will be with us till 10 o'clock. 406-721-1290 is our number. We look forward to hearing from you in this last 30 minutes with Dr. Lott. We'll be right back after this.
Thinking about building.
Smiles are powerful. A simple smile can light up a whole room.
And for 25 years, Smile Train has been lighting up the world with smiles. And each smile marks a step towards a brighter future. As the world's largest cleft lip and palate charity, Smile Train has supported more than 2 million life-changing cleft surgeries in over 90 countries, leaving a legacy of resilience, joy, and beaming smiles for generations of children. To learn more about cleft lips and palates and how Smile Train is supporting the cleft community all over the world, please visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, lighting up the world with smiles for 25 years.
Being blind doesn't always look how others may think. Stargardt disease was supposed to define me.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
A blinding eye disease attempted to force me away from doing what I was born to do.
But it cannot stop me. I have the tools.
I will keep moving forward.
Pushing past the limits of this disability.
I know where to find support and where I can be seen.
Loss of sight won't blind our vision. Innovative research, educational resources, supportive community. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is leading the charge in finding treatments and cures for blinding diseases. Learn more at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
Small businesses are the heart of America. Like you. These entrepreneurs started out with a dream and a drive to build a better life. If you have a small business idea to grow or challenge to face, you don't have to go it alone. Since 1964, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. Today, they are the nation's largest nonprofit source of expert mentoring, resources, and education. Whether you're starting out, building back, or have worked at it for years, SCORE will match you with specialized mentors. Our thousands of volunteers provide the guidance and connections you need for free. Your success is waiting. SCORE is ready to help. Find a mentor today at score.org.
For over a century, AM radio has evolved to meet the needs of our community. More than 80 million listeners depend on AM radio each month. It's also the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping us safe in dangerous times. A new bill in Congress would ensure this free, reliable service remains in cars. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM radio for every vehicle act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
We're back on TalkBack. Thanks for joining us on this Friday, August 7th. Peter Christian here. Nick Christensen is taking your phone calls this morning. And in our final half hour, Dr. John Lott, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, stays with us. And Jeff is waiting to talk with you. So, Jeff, go ahead. You're on with Dr. Lott.
Hey, good morning again, Dr. John. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
My question is a bit esoteric. It stems out of the fact that, and I've mentioned it on the show here before, that noted the neuropsychiatrist Ian McGilchrist has done extensive study about the brain. And without getting into all the details about the differences between the left and right hemisphere, because I could use up a whole week's worth of shows, one of the characteristics is that the left hemisphere is less intelligent than the right. It's more prone to wanting power and violence, emotional outbursts, and less intelligent. And Dr. Charles Murray, in his book on statistics, lit a lightning storm saying that certain ethnic groups show generally, not individually, but generally less intelligence than others. And I think that's due to the fact that we can either operate primarily out of our left brain or out of our right brain. And this is not probably a reasonable question, but I'm just wondering, do you know any sort of of studies that have looked at folks who have some sort of mental illness. For example, schizophrenia is a evidence of a right brain defect or a left brain hyperactivity. Do you know of any studies that go out there and talk to other people with certain brain abnormalities, either left hemisphere or right hemisphere, are more propensed, more tend more towards violence?
Well, I have expertise in a lot of areas, but brain functions is not one of my areas of expertise. I mean, generally, what I can say is that people with mental illnesses generally tend to be less violent on average, and also tend to be more likely to be victims of violent crime. There's also not a lot of evidence that people who have extremely low IQs tend to be more involved in crime. It's usually kind of people kind of a little bit below the average, but not really low, are the ones that tend to be more likely involved in violent crime. Generally, I mean, for example, there's a large literature by psychiatrists and psychologists, academic literature, about why they are so bad at kind of guessing whether somebody's likely to be a mass public shooter, for example. You take something like schizophrenia that you bring up. There are about 2.5 million Americans in the United States each year who are schizophrenic. If you look over the last 25 years or 26 years for mass public shooters, you'll find that one, maybe two of them had schizophrenia. So normally the type of argument is that even if you were to go and pick the 1,000 people out of the 2.5 million that you think are most likely to do that, even if one of the attackers was in that 1,000, you'd still be wrong 999 times out of the 1,000. And you may be wrong all 1,000 times. And they'll say, you know, it's just on average, they're reticent to go and identify people because individuals are who have schizophrenia are less likely to be violent on average and are, in fact, more likely to be victims of violent crime. Those are probably the main points that I could bring up with regard to it. But as opposed to left and right brain, I can't off the top of my head say that I've seen academic research on that topic.
Okay, because I just think in the future it's going to be something that's out there in terms of there's another psychiatrist, Hannah Speer. She's out of I think Norway. She lives in Switzerland now, and she comments extensively on the difference between antisocial behavior and.
Do you have a medical background yourself?
No, the brain fascinates me. When I started reading Ian McGilchrist, it explained so much.
Gentlemen, we are seconds away from a break. I apologize. We're going to come right back. Dr. John Lott, stay with us until 10 o'clock this morning. We're going to come right back after this quick timeout. 406-721-1290 is our number.
Cold showers?
My name is Emma. After a car accident left me paralyzed, Canine Companions teamed me up with my service dog, Marcia. For 50 years, Canine Companions has been teaming dogs together with those who need them the most. Visit canine.org to change lives.
Listen, retirement is the long game. We can't play about our future or our finances. Let's put ourselves in the right position.
Start building your retirement plan at thisisretirement.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We are back on Talk Back, and of course, Dr. John Lott joining us on the phone right now, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And Jeff had some thoughts that he wanted to finish up on before we get to our next caller. So, Jeff, go ahead, please.
Thanks. Dr. Lott, you said you asked if I had a medical background. I don't. It's just that the human condition really fascinates me, and I try to find out why. Why is always sure. Question I've asked, and Dr. McGilchrist talks to the why and the how in his analysis of how the two hemispheres of the brain work together, and it seems to me that there's an unexplored area here of what's happening physically and physiologically in a human brain when they commit violence, and it's just I didn't know if maybe you had any insights into the physiology of that. Or it sounds like you're just pretty much relying on reported statistics and that sort of thing. So and that's fine. I'm not criticizing. It's just I'm looking for the how.
At least I try to know the limits of my own knowledge. It's a fascinating area. If one can go and fix some kind of chemical imbalance or something else with regard to the brain that would cause people to be less violent. That would be a huge advance. And obviously, you know, there are various chemicals that are used for sex offenders or others to try to deal with things, though those are a little bit different. If one could go and give somebody a pill that would cause them to, and, you know, there are instances where a court will prescribe somebody to get certain medicine because of mental illness. And when they're off, they go and engage in some type of violent actions. Maybe there are other advances that can be made for sure. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. All right, let's move on to get John on the line. John, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott. Go ahead, please.
Hi, yes. I did come up with a question. I had a comment about Harry's call a couple calls ago. But the question is there any evidence to show that there are communist or pro-communist actors that are attempting to influence likely shooters through their social media or with other kind of means of influence to sort of nudge them toward that, toward mass shootings? Right. And
I don't know anything that shows that communists in particular are involved. Look, I forced myself to read the diaries and manifestos for these mass murderers, and over and over again, you see a similar pattern. You have individuals who are depressed almost always. You have some who do it for political reasons, but people who are, you know, they want to get attention, whether it's for themselves individually or for some cause. And they know the more people they kill, the more media attention that they're going to get. And they know they go to places where victims aren't able to go and defend themselves, they'll be able to go and kill more people and get more media attention. And they explicitly talk about those types of things in their diaries and manifestos. So, the general type of topic is something that I've looked into a fair amount. But as a communist, no. If you look at Muslims, they make up about 1% of the U.S. population, but they make up about 8% of the mass public shooters. You look at transgender individuals, they are disproportionately involved in these types of attacks by a large factor, particularly in most recent years. And it's not too surprising. I mean, you basically have individuals who are depressed, who feel that, somehow they've been put upon in some way, and they want to get attention. Time after time, you read these diaries and manifestos, you'll see people who
have been planning these attacks long in advance, 6 months at least. Sometimes it's years in advance that they've done this. And you'll frequently find statements saying, if I can only kill more people than such and such did, I'm going to be able to go and get even more media attention. I think those are the common factors. People, a small group for religious views, Muslims, who are doing this, but the vast majority have no political views at all. Over 70% are simply individuals who are suicidal. Now, we've always had people who are suicidal. It's just at some point along the line, people realized that they could get people to notice that they were here, that they could go and get media attention, that they could become famous in some way by going and killing lots of other people, and they'd get lots of media attention. And that's pretty much what we've seen.
Well, we're coming up against a hard break. When we come back, we have John.
Well, John just had a quick comment.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
You're
please.
On. Go ahead. You got a minute for it.
Thank you for your answer, Mr. Lott. And I just wanted to let you know, per Harry's call earlier, trying to sharpshoot you on what's actual evidence and what's anecdotal or whatnot, the weights of the facts and figures. We really appreciate you gathering all this information. It's painstaking, and we really benefit from it. So I think he just suffers from cognitive dissonance. No matter how many facts you put in front of him, he's not going to appreciate it.
Harry makes it lively anyway, but we have to get him on to different questions other than the vote fraud stuff. So at least it was a little different today with questioning me about the law enforcement statistics. By the way, thank you very much.
We're going to come right back after a timeout. And Perry from Columbus is going to be with us, along with Dave. And a couple other phone lines still open. Dr. Lott will be with us for another 10 minutes or so here on TalkBack statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Phone number 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And we will continue with Dr. Lott, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, right after this timeout. Oh, it's been a We are back on Talk Back. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it on this Friday, August 7th. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. Dr. John Lott is our featured guest this morning, and Perry from Columbus is on. Perry, go ahead, please.
Good morning, gentlemen. Dr. Lott, you know, I want to go back to the vote fraud thing for a moment. I'm going to bounce for Harry and Dave and people like them. You know, I just have to say that there's six of the most insidious words in the English language that have always been used by a sword as a shield by people who just refuse to see the truth. And you have no proof of that. And we're going to I'm talking about the 2000 election. You know, there's a little movie called 2000 Mules, and it's Dinesh D'Souza, Catherine Engelbrecht, and others from 2022 that basically document, and I'm not talking about speculation, I'm talking about documenting everything that happened in the five states that were decided the election for Sleepy Joe. They used geo-tracking. They monitored the cell phone movements of the mules or other paid criminal traffickers delivering the illegal ballots to drop boxes. There's the actual video that the surveillance cameras installed at the drop boxes by the states themselves. I actually saw what was going on in the State Farm Arena in Atlanta with the midnight or the 3 o'clock in the morning plumbing leak, and they chased everybody out, observers, everybody, and then they brought in trucks at 3:30 in the morning and started counting ballots again. And all of a sudden, Joe Biden was way ahead when everybody went to bed, thinking the counting was postponed until the morning. It was he was the other way around. So, you know, Harry, Dave, all you guys who just, there are none so blind as those who refuse to see. And it's on 2000mules.com. I challenge you to get the movie. I'll bet you can watch it for free, but get on the internet or TV, or get it, rent it, buy it, whatever, and then we'll talk about how there was no election fraud in the 2020 election.
All right. Thank you for the call, sir. Dr. Locke, go ahead.
Right. Well, I guess there are a couple of comments. One is just to compare the rules for voting in the United States versus other countries around the world. There's no country, any place in the world that has mail-in ballots like we have here in the United States, where they just, you have some where you just go and just send out letters to, you know, ballots to everybody who's registered to vote. And you know, you look around the world, basically virtually every country has government issued photo IDs to be able to go and vote. They require proof of citizenship. You know, it's just, and the reason why they do is because they've discovered vote fraud. And one of the things people have to understand is how hard it is to go and catch vote fraud, because if you have vote buying, for example, both the buyer and the seller are gaining from that transaction, and they have an incentive to go and try to hide that transaction occurring.
Dr. Lott, we are coming up against our end of our time together. I want to give you the last 2 minutes or so to just wrap things up from your perspective with the Crime Prevention Research Center, sir.
Well, okay, thanks. I mean, we've been doing a lot of research. We've just put out a survey on the rate that people are carrying concealed handguns. We have our annual report that's being put out on the FBI active shooting data that should be out any day now. Next week, we'll probably have a report where we've looked at all the school shootings in the United States from 2000 up through 2025. And, you know, it just, you know, we just, people can go to our website at crimeresearch.org and see all the research and data that we're doing, but we're constantly putting out new reports.
Well, Dr.
We have recent stuff about how concentrated murders are in the United States, that 2% of the counties account for 54% of the murders, and within those counties, on average, 2/3 of their murders take place within 10 block areas. 53% of the counties have zero murders in any given year. Another 16.5% have only one murder. So about 70% of the counties have either zero or one murder. Anyway, those are just some of the things that we put out.
Dr. Lott, it is always a pleasure and privilege to talk with you, and thank you. Keep up the good work, keep up the research, and we look forward to our next visit, sir.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dr. Lott. Appreciate it. All right, Mr. Nick, as we look forward to Monday, sir, what's coming up?
We'll likely do open phones for the first hour, and then from 9 to 10, Rob Nadelson will join us.
All right, Rob Nadelson from the Independence Institute, and I know that he's working with several organizations now, and always a pleasure. Rob is such a good friend of the show, and he loves taking phone calls, and we're looking forward to him being on with us. Is he on the phone or in person? Do we know?
He'll be on the phone.
On the phone. Okay. Well, either way, we love having Dr. Nadelson on the phone with us. So you guys get out there and make it a great weekend. I hope you can get through the smoke, and hopefully by Monday it'll be a little bit more clear in our beautiful Missoula Valley. So till then, on behalf of Nick Christensen, I'm Peter Christian. Thank you so much. Have a great and safe weekend, everybody.